It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go, and on the line right now, the hardest working man in show is our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. How'd I do?
Really well, I'd say.
Thanks.
I mean, that was probably like a 8.25.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Okay, that was scale 1 to 10. I think you got into the 8s there.
What can I do to be better, Ross, on that? I want to be respectful of the sponsor of this segment, which we love talking to you, so I want to be respectful to them and to you. What can I do to get back into that 9 and 10 range on that Hellman's read?
Yeah, it's just the level of enthusiasm and energy when you say it.
Okay.
Like, I feel like Seth would be a 9-something.
Okay.
It would be like, What's the line again? Mayo what?
Mayo game day be delicious.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, so I think Seth got up to like an 8.75 right there.
Okay.
For me, like it would be Sean would be like, all right, we got Ross Tucker, our Odyssey Insider, on here. He's sponsored by Hellman's Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious.
Yeah, that's a 10.5 right there.
I'm learning Japanese so I can speak Japanese without people accusing me of being, stereotypical or
ugly
something.
American.
I want to be a good enough in Japanese because it's just fun to say things in Japanese.
Yeah.
I'll do it in Japanese for the Hellman's.
Oh, that's just showing
I don't
off.
Know if mayo's big in Japan or not, but I can make it big in Japan. I could probably get super famous in Japan as being the big mayo colored mayo spokesperson.
That's
from
a
America.
Good project, yeah.
Famous American football player, legendary American football player, Seth Payne. He's one of the best football players who ever lived, and now he's bringing this condiment to you.
He's bringing mayonnaise to Japan.
Okay.
Back to football. So, yeah, you've been busy, Ross. You were on that game last night here on our air, the Titans and the Dolphins. You were on that Browns-Raiders game as well. I was very curious when I saw you on that game, your impressions of where the Browns are right now with Deshaun Watson.
Well, that's what made that game so interesting in particular. I thought he played really well, and they still lost. I mean, they just have a lot of issues right now. Their defense didn't play nearly as well as they did last year, and or they need them to play. And, I mean, Amari Cooper had a brutal drop that led to the only interception for Deshaun. You know, Deshaun was constantly under duress. The offensive line is really struggling to pick up certain blitzes and stunts. They have a new offensive line coach. Maybe that has something to do with it. They also were down 3 starters on the offensive line to start the game,
yeah.
And then their center went down. So they're down 4 starters on the offensive line. And then, you know, late in the game, he throws like a 70-yard touchdown pass to Amari Cooper, but the center got a somewhat questionable holding penalty. Just a rough all-around performance by the Browns, but honestly, on the list of reasons why it didn't work out or issues, I would say Watson was very, very low in that game.
And then as far as the other game, the Titans, speaking of mayonnaise, Will Levis gets injured last night because he's going to keep getting injured because he takes so many hits like that. Should we, as Texans fans, be more concerned with Mason Rudolph perhaps being the quarterback than Will Levis?
Yes and no. I think Rudolph is probably not going to make some of the critical errors that Levis makes that really put the team in a bad spot. And we saw it again last night. I mean, he threw the ball directly right to Emmanuel Ogba. And Emmanuel Ogba was able to, you know, a dropping edge rusher. And I think there was like on the monitor, you could see Will Levis saying, "I didn't see him." Like, yeah, we saw that, Will. I mean, we noticed that. And so that was an issue, obviously. Rudolph, though, he's not going to make some of the plays. He won't make the plays with his legs that Levis does. He won't make some of the throws he does. He's kind of like a statue in the pocket. But they're pretty good on defense. You know, and they've got pretty good skill guys. They could be, you know, I wonder what their record would be if Mason Rudolph had started all these games.
Yeah, right.
You know, Levis has these critical interceptions. Yeah. If he had started all these games, the Titans are probably like 3-1.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because, you know, obviously they brought in Bill Callahan, one of the better offensive line coaches in the league, and my concern was that over the course of the season, the Titans will figure that system out. It takes some time and be coached, and that they're going to look like a bad. They looked a little bit more like a Bill Callahan offensive line last night, I thought.
They did, and they got a lot of young guys up there, and you would think that they'll just sort of continue to look better in that regard like they have so far. And I think once they do that, they'll be a force to be reckoned with. They didn't even have Jeffrey Simmons last night, which makes a big difference as well. And that Tavondre Sweat from University of Texas, that guy is an absolute monster. He was my defensive player of the game for the game last night. He's certainly a difference-making player. So I think that the Titans, they're not a bad team. You know, they're not, you know, they're, I know they were this second-to-last winless team and whatever. They're not a bad team. Not many teams are going to win games when your quarterback's turning it over, like on average, three times a game.
Right. Ross, that's Tavondre Sweat was so intriguing to me because he's so big. He had trouble keeping his weight under control in college. And then he's coming into a league where defensive, like run stuffing defensive tackles. And I know he can push the pocket too, but he's just so big. They don't have as much value as they used to. And now all of a sudden we're in this year where, man, it looks like teams are really going to have to start focus on running the ball. I feel like Tavondre Sweat might have been a sneaky, brilliant pick by the Titans, because I've seen him do to guys in the NFL what he was doing to guys in college, just manhandling them at times.
Yeah, he is super, super impressive. I mean, you know, there's always going to be issues with guys like that, with their size, about motivation and effort. I mean, he was all kinds of motivated with great effort last night. It was fun to watch, for sure.
Ross Tucker joining us here for his weekly visit with us. He's our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery stores to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Ross, Texans and Bills coming up this Saturday here, this Sunday, I should say, at NRG Stadium. And obviously, Stephon Diggs is a huge storyline here. I don't know. The Bills got run off the field by the Ravens on Sunday. Does that factor in at all to your handicap for this Bills Texans game this weekend, the way that the Bills were maybe exposed a little bit by the Ravens?
Yeah, always. And I wouldn't say it's because they were quote unquote exposed. I would say because I expect them to bounce back. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at it, we talk about this a lot on the Even Money Betting podcast, but when a team, you know, like the Bills Sunday night gets blown out like that, especially a good team, prideful bunch, it seems like, you know, they usually bounce back the next week. And I don't necessarily mean winning the game, but I'd be really surprised if they laid another egg, right? I mean, it feels like they'll be able to come out and play much, much better than they did in that game against the Ravens. And by the way, as bad as that was against the Ravens, a couple things. Number one, I don't think the Texans are going to be able to run the ball on the Bills like the Ravens were, right? They're a different team. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to say the strength for the Bills probably is in their secondary. And then number two, you know, they were about to come back. Until they called that trick play, that was going to be a game, at least it felt like, that was going to be a game that came down to the end with Josh Allen. You know, they had scored a touchdown. They were marching for another touchdown. They went with a trick play. Joe Brady did. And the next thing you knew, Josh Allen got strip sacked. Ravens scored, and the game ended up being a blowout. But I think it was going to end up being a pretty close game.
Ross Tucker, I don't know why I said it that way. Hey, Ross Tucker.
Yeah, why'd you say my whole name right
now? Yeah,
here?
No, hey, what's Ross your middle Tucker. Name? You do his whole
my
name.
My mom's about to get mad at me because I did something wrong. What did I do?
Yeah, now listen here, Ross Tucker. If you look at the Texans right now, I mean, the biggest thing for me is I think that the Texans' offensive line, despite still getting way too many penalties, I think they figured some things out by the end of that game. I just don't know if it was because they were facing the Jaguars as opposed to the Bears defense or the like any other defense. So I feel like Joe Mixon, you know, going back old school again, just like T'Vondre Sweat might be a more valuable defensive tackle right now this year. I feel like Joe Mixon is a very, very large key to success for the Texans to have a shot at really looking good versus the Bills.
Well, it's funny that you say that. I mean, I really thought a couple of years ago that Joe might be done. You know, like I thought he was kind of beat up and just wasn't expecting him to be able to play like this again. But you're right, having like a banger of a back, a sustainer, you know, like Joe Mixon is, it does feel like sort of like what you said about T'Vondre Sweat, that Nick Caserio was ahead of the game bringing in a guy like Mixon, which is what the Texans need. And I think in particular, to be able to finish some games, right? Late in games when you have a lead, to have a guy that can get you those tough yards, like we know Joe Mixon can, I think that's a big part of it. So it'll be interesting to see just how healthy he is. It sounded like, you know, he might have been able to play against the Jaguars, but they wanted to give him a little bit more rest, which makes sense. I'm curious, I don't actually see the quotes. What are they even saying about all these penalties? Like what is Laramie saying and what is D'Amico saying?
We've reached the point where, you know, there's nothing really you can say.
We're numb to it.
Yeah, we're getting the same thing. I mean, like, I don't know if they bring in some psychologist or something. As far as Laramie didn't have any false starts. He had two holding penalties. And the thing is, Ross, that he's we forgot to get your opinion on this. They mentioned this on the broadcast. I got a text from a former teammate about this. Laramie wears bright red gloves. And on the broadcast, they pointed out that, like, man, offensive linemen really shouldn't be wearing bright red gloves against the white jersey. So it felt like, all right, you got the false starts under control, but what this still feels like a stupid penalty again out of Laramie Tunsil.
You know what I think is really interesting about that? I don't know if there's any rules regarding the color of your gloves, but now that you say that, offensive linemen should absolutely wear the colored gloves of the other team's jersey every week if they're allowed to. I mean, I'm sure there's some rules, but like that, I mean, that'd be worth it. Like if the Browns center was wearing the Raiders black glove, I don't know. I mean, maybe they wouldn't have called it. That's just interesting. It's funny to think about, although I don't know. It'd be weird. Like if a Raiders guy was wearing, like, right, you know, Browns orange gloves.
Texans are playing the Packers. Like. Texans are playing the Packers, and Laramie's got on green gloves.
This might be one of those things that a lot of people know and didn't like. Because, like, my one friend from college, that was the first thing he was told. The first thing he was told in college was never wear bright gloves as an offensive lineman. But that might be one of those things that not a lot of people, you never think of it. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Ross Tucker joining us for his weekly visit. Ross, the power rankings, were you able to get those cobbled together? And if so, where are the Texans right now?
Oh, yeah, man. Got back to the hotel around midnight. Did the power rankings last night. Got Steve Fezzik to wake up at 4 a.m. Pacific so we could do Even Money Betting Podcast.
Oh, my God.
This morning, and now I'm in an Uber on the way to the airport in traffic. I don't know how people do this every day. Holy cow. Anyway, Yeah, I think the Texans, I had them like five, maybe. Okay. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think five or six seems about right.
Is this the hardest season for you since you've been doing power rankings to kind of put this thing together? It feels like there is not a dominant team. I mean, there's teams that have had dominant performances, but it feels like this is about as even a year 4 weeks in as we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with NFL power rankings is that, much different than college in particular, you just cannot, like, you cannot overreact to any one performance.
Yeah.
And I forget what property is. The transitive property, maybe? Like, you can't say, well, they beat them by 30, so then they would, because, like, you'll get twisted into a pretzel if you try to do it that way. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work, right? So, I would say, yeah, I think it's a difficult year, but I don't know. I feel like they're all difficult years.
Yeah. Sometimes it's more distracting riding in an Uber than it is driving yourself, depending on.
Yeah, is the driver enjoying the conversation right now, Ross?
I'm not sure. On his radio, he's listening to like political stuff.
Oh,
so probably not.
Oh.
Doesn't seem.
Oh, put
like
it on speaker. No, I'm just joking.
That's a bold move. Bold move by an Uber driver.
He likes America. He likes American football.
Oh, good. Very good.
Oh, he just said the Jets are his team.
Oh, well, tell him we're sorry.
Yeah. You better tip him well. Yeah. That's your typical 12%, Ross.
Give you a big tip for being a Jets fan. John Paul is he's the driver, but he says he's a Jets fan.
Oh man, poor guy. All right, yeah, take care of him, Ross. That's a rough life to live right there. All right, the great Ross Tucker joining us. He is our Odyssey NFL insider. And Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
9.2, I
yes,
think.
Yes. I'm going to get that 10 someday. I got to figure it out. Ross, we appreciate you, man. Safe travels. We'll hit you next Tuesday.
All right, see you, dude.
All right, thanks. Ross Tucker joining us here on the program.
You know, we should play the David Bautista audio I sent you yesterday at some point. You can channel maybe a pro wrestler when you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Now, this was an interview by him. It wasn't a promo.
Right.
He got caught by the guy that caught Cal outside of his car.
School of Hard Knocks.
Asking about business advice. Bautista gave some really good advice.
I had no idea that Bautista lost a bunch of his money after wrestling and before he got into movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. I didn't know
so
that.
He was, down on his luck for a little bit.
Yeah, He was a main eventer, man. He's main evented WrestleMania before.
Yeah.
He's a big star. He's a big star now in all those superhero movies.
I thought that interview started off with like, oh, boy, Bautista wants no part of this. We'll play it later.
He was good.
Yeah, he was really good.
He was good in that one. That was good advice.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We thank Ross Tucker for joining us on the program. The Bills and the Texans this week. Sounds to me like the Bills getting blown out by the Ravens, probably not good news for the Texans.
I think that, as far as motivationally,
he
and
looks
then
at it through
back.
Ross has a handicapper's gene to him.
Yeah.
And he looks at that as when good teams get blown out, they very rarely come back the following week.
They snap back.
Yes, I think and play like they did the week before.
There are a couple things where, not to boil it all down to the run game, the passing game still more matters more, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that the Texans, for them to be functioning and operating with a lot of potency, the way they're designed, the way that Bobby wants to do it is like Kyle. It very much feels like Kyle Shanahan. The pass game and the run game are both interrelated. And with Joe Mixon out there, I feel really good about it. I'm not saying he's going to run for 199 yards or anything like that, but I think there are some areas to attack with the Bills and to put them into binds if you've got the run game going. So I'm optimistic that it's going to look a lot better with Joe Mixon in there. Defensively, the Texans, like, for one, just getting Christian Harris back should be good overall. Mm-hmm. The Texans and the Bills are both kind of light defenses. They got light bodies, and it's going to create liabilities versus the run. The one thing that I'd like to see more of is, at times, the defensive backs are just, on some of these outside runs, they're not playing their responsibilities like they should. And there's a certain Derek Stingley last year, I thought, got really good at the selfless part of it, where sometimes you're probably not going to make the tackle, just turn the play back
inside.
And that's just a matter of getting to your spot and crashing down on a bigger offensive lineman sometimes. And there were just times they got pinned inside on the outside runs too, that they've got to snap some of this together, because teams are going to do it. If they're able to keep the offense from really churning, like, teams are going to keep trying to run the ball on you.
If you want to be at the game on Sunday, I don't know why I keep why my lips keep forming themselves to say Saturday for this game, but Sunday, you can be listening later on in this segment. It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. We need to mention that. You can be sitting in the bullpen front row on Sunday at Bills Texans if you're listening, and if you're the right caller when we do the call to action. It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. Excited about that. This is one of the best home games of the year on the schedule. The Bills coming up here. Here's D'Amico Ryans, asked yesterday, how do you feel about your squad 4 weeks in?
Yeah, with where we are now, we're just excited for the next one versus the Bills. Like, a really good opponent coming in to our house. So we're excited. We're fired up about this matchup. We know they're not feeling their best after the loss, and we're not feeling our best after how we won the game. We're excited about the win, but there's a lot of things to clean up, a lot of things for us to fix. We're excited to fix it off of a win, but we still have to get us right as a team, and we'll continue to work on that.
Yeah, I don't think that D'Amico is under any illusions about where they need to improve and how they need to improve, that they're not playing. If he were asked bluntly, do you think they've played like a Super Bowl caliber team? And if he were to give a frank and honest answer, he would just have to say no. I would expect in his mind it would be like, hell no, they're not playing like. And then
that
would,
answer is an acknowledgement.
Then he would change some things. That I think it's very easy to see if they played that tough schedule, depending on what happens with the Chiefs as the season goes on, or if they, you know, late in the end of the year. Right now, if they had opened up with that schedule, let's say if they had opened up and Tua were healthy for that game, and they had played the Dolphins and then the Chiefs and the Ravens, I don't think they'd be 3-1 right now. You know?
Oh no! Oh God, no! Yeah, no, they would be whoever the fourth game is. Whatever. Yeah, like they would lose to all with Tua. They would have, the way they've played by and large, especially the last three games with all the penalties.
Yeah.
They would have lost to all three of those teams, I think, assuming those teams bring their normal game to Energy Stadium.
You know who's really up high there right now in penalties, too, is the Ravens, who got off to a much more lackluster beginning than you would have anticipated or thought. There's a lot of sloppiness all over the league, but for some teams, it bites them. We saw this with the Ravens last year offensively. It took them a few games to really get going. So
here's the thing about the penalties, is that there's never a direct correlation with the most penalized teams and the worst teams in the league. Like, that's, I think, what needs to be pointed out. There's many years where the best teams in the league are among the most penalized, but it's the nature of the penalties the Texans are getting. Like, the penalties that the good teams get are maybe, you know, defensive holding, but they're getting away with it 10 other times, that kind of thing.
The Legion of Boom defense, kind of like they found this balance where they were going to be real handsy, but they knew that the payoff was they're not going to get called for it that much.
Right, the balance sheet is like, all right, we're going to get a couple 10-yard penalties here, and we're going to give up a couple first downs, but the flip side is they're going to have a really hard time moving the football because the refs can't call it every play.
Right.
You know, they can't call it. And I think there's other penalties, too, with teams that have an ethos about them. The Ravens are one of them. The Steelers, teams like that, that just have a culture about them, that, yeah, they might get penalized more because they're hard-hitting types of penalties. They're penalties with a residual effect of intimidation or something like that. There's nothing intimidating about the penalties the Texans are getting.
Right.
They can't line up. They jump off sides.
It's false starts, right.
They hold. Yeah, like they. Steven Sims is talking trash to somebody after a zero-yard punt return on the sideline. They're, like, the Texans, the penalties the Texans are getting are dumb penalties.
Yeah.
They're soft penalties. They're silly penalties.
Right.
And they're inopportune penalties a lot of times as well. So,
well, and also, if you take, you know, they have 12 false start penalties. If Laramie had never jumped off sides, they'd be right in the middle of the pack in terms of how many penalties they have. They would only have 5 false start penalties, which would put them as an average team. So a lot of this is single-handedly Laramie Tunsil.
Which team leads the league in false start penalties?
The Chicago Bears.
How many
team known for their offensive wizardry right now. They've got 9 false starts.
Okay, so Laramie's catching up to them. Laramie's got almost as many as the Bears.
Yeah. No, it's definitely the nature and the timing of the injuries where they've just been absolute drive. And it's the consistency, too. It's the fact that they've been able to make a difficult situation that much more difficult than it had to be.
Yeah.
False starts on third down.
It's
third and 7 and it goes to third and 12.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's hard to, you know, you've only got one chance to convert that third and 12.
That's huge, man. That is huge. Yeah, I just hate the fact that anytime there's a good play, I can't even really enjoy it because I'm looking all over the field
I went back and I watched the TV version of the final touchdown drive. And that's what the announcers were thinking immediately. You saw yellow on the field, and they said, here we go again.
On the first play?
Yeah, well, it ended up being a defensive penalty on the Jaguars.
Yeah.
But that's what I felt.
Me too.
Oh, crap,
that was the play
yellow.
Where CJ scrambled to the left, the very first play of the series. I felt the same thing. I'm like, oh, who held? Who held? How do you feel about this team 4 weeks in?
I feel optimistic. I think that the biggest question marks in my mind right now really are, what's Kenyon Green going to be as a football player?
Okay.
Because Kenyon's having a rough go of it. I think he's better athletically and in a lot of respects than he was his rookie year, but he's still having some really bad snaps at times. I think that I'm just trying to table how I feel about Laramie Tunsil until after this game and figure it out. But, I mean, look, on that touchdown drive, on CJ's one-yard scramble, Laramie blocked the guy he was supposed to block. There was nobody else to block, and he's just standing erect.
Literally
standing erect.
Yeah.
His posture was perpendicular.
Yeah.
It just looked almost just like a completely and totally a spectator. And then he saw that there was somebody to block, so he had to drop down to an athletic position and then go.
Way too late.
I mean, it's the weirdest thing. He's just standing completely erect. There's just something about Laramie there is not that dog in him the way you want out of a team that is going to be a genuinely good rushing offense. It was so weird. It was so weird.
A dog would be looking for somebody to hit.
Yeah, I can go gore somebody or something. Yeah. I can scan. But he just, it's everything you would
Laramie
coach
him out
had
to a do. Laramie had a posture about him where he's like, well, my work is done here.
That's one thing that gets him. His body language really gets him in terms of how people feel about him.
Yeah.
There's just never any.
He's so laid back.
He never
too.
Looks one bit upset like that his guy tackled the quarterback
right.
or anybody else.
Right,
and,
right. Yeah. Here's D'Amico Ryans looking ahead to the Buffalo Bills this weekend.
What makes the Bills dangerous? I think they play complementary football as a team. The offense does a great job of running the ball, the RPO, getting the ball out to their playmakers. They do a great job of keeping drives going, and they score touchdowns when they get, you know, in the red area. So, and their defense play does a really good job of, you know, disguising their coverages. They're very sound. You can tell they're well coached. They're sound, and they play well together. Those guys fly around. Smaller defense, but these guys, they fly around, they hit, they play together, and just collectively as a team, they play good complementary football, and I think that's why they've been really good over the past few years.
Yeah, I think McDermott has got those guys. Enough of those guys have been in the system long enough that with McDermott, a lot of it is similar in methodology to D'Amico. You don't want to be overly complicated or anything. You just want guys to be really, really good at what they do. And that's where the Texans need to get to. I think defensively right now, some of the biggest questions are just you feel good about your cornerbacks. You know, Lassiter is having some rookie moments. Versus a better quarterback, Lassiter would have gotten torched on a couple of plays. I mean, he did get torched.
A couple times this year.
He didn't have to pay for it last week, yeah. Right? So, but I think he's going to get better. The problem is that, man, you know, this is what I worried about in the preseason. Jalen Petrie is not a slot corner. He is a safety-playing linebacker who they're also asking to play in the slot. And teams are realizing it and noticing it. So there's times in the game where in zone, Jalen's awesome at getting into passing lanes, making the play on the ball, all of that. But even when it's zone that converts into man, he's a liability. It just, teams are going to start picking on that. And I think Murray the same way. He made some really good plays, but there's also times where in man coverage, you can see that it's teams are going to figure this out.
Yeah.
So the antidote for a lot of this is really simply pass rush. You just got to get a more menacing pass rush than they've had. They've had moments and they've had some good spots, but the huge sack production in the Bears game was a lot more about the blitzes than it was individual butt kicking. So
yeah.
Yes, you'd love the defensive tackles to be better, but the two name guys, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, I need to see a little bit more kamikaze out of
them. That was a disappointing performance on Sunday by those guys.
And the Jaguars were chipping them a lot and doing a lot of things to make life difficult for them. But it seems like that same problem that Will had last year early in the season is that he just seems at times to just lock into a bull rush, you know, and turn it into a shoving match. And that's where these pressure stats from NFL Next Gen, they're based kind of like on GPS where, okay, he got this close to the quarterback. That's a pressure.
Yeah.
Not really. Not in the NFL. Not when, if you've got a guy that's willing to stand there and the pressure is slow and compressing, it's not the same as a genuine pressure where you're getting a hit on the quarterback.
Yeah. Will is a physical freak, and he's an eager physical freak.
Yeah.
He's a physical freak that is willing to learn and that gives all out effort all the time. We've seen physical freaks that don't do that all the time. Will is not one of those. He gives all out effort. But yeah, that's the thing. And when I focus in on him, is that for all the talk of him trying to refine his game,
yeah,
finish better, add some moves, I feel like every time I'm honed in on him, he's still just shoving the tackle into the lap of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Or when he's getting sacks, it's because there was some sort of mental error along the offensive line that leaves him unblocked,
mm-hmm,
and he just goes and murders the quarterback.
Right, or something that already seeps out because of pressure from the inside.
Yeah, there's been no refinement to his
right,
game.
It doesn't look like, and you know what that probably is? I'm guessing it's his ankle. I mean, this is what he's not a naturally bendy guy, and when you're learning to play with that shin angle and all that, that puts a lot of stress on your ankle. So, maybe it's just that he doesn't 100% feel great about his ankle right now.
This is a text message. The fact that it's 7:30 a.m. Tuesday morning and Steven Sims is still on the roster is a joke. Send a message. I guess they did. Message heard loud and clear. The implication from the text being that if Steven Sims is still on the team, it's okay to make mistakes in the return game that could have cost you the game, and then 15-yard penalties that could further cost you the game. D'Amico was asked about Steven Sims yesterday at his media availability. Here's what he had to say.
For Sims, just, and for every player, right, you just have to be accountable. And that's the message to everybody. Like, yeah, we all wish we didn't make mistakes with plays, but mistakes happen. You move on. Like, you just move on. We can't go back and correct it. We just move on.
I heard that answer yesterday, and I'm like, I think he still might get cut.
Yeah.
You know, like, D'Amico immediately pivoted to everybody's got to get better and didn't sprinkle a little confectionery sugar of the good things that Steven Sims does.
I get really, I don't think that the way to fix certain issues is to just cut somebody as an example or something. You live 100% constantly understanding that you're going to get, you're always in danger of being cut.
Sure.
So I don't know if doing it for one particular game or mistake is necessarily the right way to go about it, but I do think that he's on watch. Do you cut Laremy Tunsil because he's had all these?
Of course not.
It feels like I want it in the moment, emotionally, I want to.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you got to do that balance in your head of, all right, what are we giving up versus all this? And with Laremy, I mean, his Even though I feel like his status as a player is a little bit overblown at this point, I think some people have succumbed to some propaganda because he's not nearly as good overall as he is. He is a good pass blocker, but he's a flawed player. The fact of the matter is that damage is already done. You'd love to say, well, sunk cost, get rid of him. You'd never to replace him and to also take the dead cap hit and all that. It's not it. And Blake Fisher's not ready to replace him.
No, he's not. And Tunsil screwed himself out of the Pro Bowl this year because it's so much about impressions. People aren't watching left tackles across the league. You know what I mean? Whether it's coaches voting or fans voting or whatever, the only thing they know of Laremy Tunsil are all these graphics going across their social media timelines of him setting records for false start penalties.
Yeah. It's just weird that it's strange. It's almost like he's got a defensive ends mentality who's a pass rush specialist and doesn't care about the run at all.
Yeah.
It's like he's an offensive line pass blocking specialist.
Yeah.
Which is the least dog thing I've ever heard.
It's very finesse.
I don't know. The run game, frankly, it's not for me. I'll let the blue collar folk handle that. I'm a pass blocking specialist.
Text message, when does our suspended defensive end come back? He's got a name, first of all. His name is Denico Autry. He's not the suspended defensive. Well, he is, but refer to him by his name. He'll be back week 7.
Right, and part of that with Denico Autry coming back is that he can rush from the inside, too. And I think some of the interior pass rush is a work in progress right now. They're trying to figure out who do we want in there and when. You know, Tim Settle has shown up. I think that Autry might make a bigger difference just in terms of being able to get a more menacing pass rush across the board instead of having it's not menacing right now.
Yep. Text message, Seth Petrie needs to be benched. They need a real third slot cornerback. Call Steven Nelson.
Steven Nelson. Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Steven Nelson was on his podcast dogging D'Amico again after the Vikings game. Yes.
What did he say?
Yeah, he posted a milk dud graphic and I don't know exactly what he said.
Yeah.
The milk dud graphic is enough.
Boy, what's a strange thing to live in Houston and make it your brand to go after D'Amico Ryans. Maybe that's going to be his thing.
Does Steven Nelson still live here?
He has like a farm
he's got
up
a
in
farm,
Humble.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they've got animals.
Like a ranch.
They've got land and some animals.
Oh,
it's
they?
Not like a working farm. But,
okay, gotcha.
They've got farm animals.
Okay. But someone like me, that's a farm. I know you grew up in the farm industry. So
I guess I call it a farm if you're actually like getting revenue from it and everything. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's not even a hobby. He's not even trying to use it as a tax shelter, I don't think.
No.
So,
because he's got so much money, remember?
Right, that's right. He turned his nose up at all these offers.
Like Warren Buffett.
The one team that might have been willing to pay him respectable money, he just decided to just go off insulting during a hurricane.
Took a nasty plunge into a big pile of money after it.
Yeah. Now it's so with Petrie, it's interesting because usually you say bench somebody, it's almost like you got to bench him for bad performance. He's, I think, for the good things they want him to do, I think he's been doing a lot of those things. I think as a nickel defender versus the run or a nickel linebacker, I think that I've been happy with a lot of what he's done, but he's just not a guy in man coverage. And I really did. In training camp, I kept watching and I just kept wondering, like, all right, what are they really going to do with Jalen Petrie, right? Because they can't. I'm watching him play slot corner and, like, no, right? They can't really. He can't really be the every down guy, can he? And lo and behold, it turned out he was.
Dude,
I just
he is.
And it looks like what I feared is that teams are going to be able to start picking on him when they identify that he's in man. People want more blitzes. All right. When it's not. It gets real predictable when teams know that, all right, Jalen Petrie is good as a blitzer, but if he's not blitzing, he's awful in coverage.
Yes.
It gets a lot easier to game plan with that over the course of time. So he has value. They just got to figure some things out differently with the way they're operating right now.
Someone said it sounds like Steven Nelson owns a petting zoo.
You know what? You know you should do pictures on animals.
Yeah.
You know, own a llama, own a camel,
like
one of those things, and then you can rake just going and charging $5 a picture or whatever it is these days.
Hey, someone's asking, what did you think of Blake Fisher's snaps when he was in at left tackle? Have you had a chance to rewatch him yet?
Yeah, you know what? Fisher is more steadily impressive than I expected him to be. I think right now, over the last couple weeks, I'm really way more worried about Kenyon Green. So I think, did you say Blake Fisher? Sorry, I apologize. I had Juice Scruggs in my mind.
Yeah.
same thing I thought of him during training camp. There's something there, but man, he doesn't have his man strength yet. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to learn, as a taller, lankier guy, he just doesn't have quite the base and the technique yet to get away with being a taller, lankier guy. I think he wants to be physical, but yeah, he's clearly not as good as Laramie when he's in there.
Yeah.
There's a, look, I think people have like tried to create this straw man of like, well, all these people saying that Laramie shouldn't play because of Blake Fisher and throw him in there no matter what. It's way more complicated than that. I don't.
Laramie has good snaps.
Yeah,
too.
I think like honestly, your best option at this point is that Laramie. I think maybe I'm hoping that it was like an intervention.
Wakes the hell up.
I'm hoping that it was kind of an intervention after the Vikings game.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a little bit. It's just not naturally in him to be a finisher in the run game.
Yeah.
He's not built like Trent Williams.
Nope.
So he's got to consciously think, oh, I should keep going now instead of standing completely erect at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
I should be engaged in this the entire time. But even though he was standing completely upright while his quarterback was still behind him, to his credit, he did try to dive in and
he
help
did.
Out.
He did. He's like, oh, there's people.
So baby yeah. steps, right?
Yeah, yeah,
baby
yeah.
steps.
Yeah, yeah, good call.
At some point, all the money he's making will be worth him actually trying to block extra people in a run play.
There you go. There you go.
I mean, it was a pass play that turned into a run game. But
Yep. Let's give away some Texans tickets for this Sunday. Bill's coming to town. 713-572-4610. And you can be sitting in the front row to watch C.J. Stroud and his crew battle Buffalo. Be caller number 5 right now to win a pair of tickets in the bullpen at 713-572-4610. You got two more chances to win today. One in the noon hour, one in the 5 o'clock hour. And listen for your cue to call in either of those hours. If you're not caller number 5 now, you still got two more chances. It is a Texans ticket Tuesday, our last one for a little while because the Texans are on the road for a couple of weeks after this. Your home of the Houston Texans is Sports Radio 610. We're getting you to the game. All right, up next, Nico Collins. Where is Nico Collins right now on the list, in the tapestry, if you will, of offensive players in the NFL, specifically wide receivers? Is Nico Collins a top 3 wide receiver right now in the NFL? We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. We got a lot to get to still on the show, man. We'll circle back to the Astros. We're going to do the weekly Pettycast.
Oh, Pettycast.
At the top of the hour. Yeah. Yeah, I always, we started doing that a few weeks ago. We get super petty or we play people who are super petty. It's really just a chance to celebrate pettiness.
Right, right. Yeah, like embrace the ugly part of you.
Right.
Yeah, embrace the part of you that doesn't try to, you know, to worry about like, is this the right thing or not?
Yeah. Yeah. If we keep it contained to one segment, then, you know.
This is how I keep from being a criminal.
Right.
Because I get to exercise a little bit and pretend that I'm a horrible human being.
Yeah.
But then I like, so that, but, and I get that. I get my kicks that way, instead of then also being like, and you know, it'd probably actually be pretty easy to rob a bank. Yeah. And who's being hurt anyway? It's all insured. Yeah, there we go.
It's all insured.
Yeah.
Here was D'Amico Ryans. This is from Sunday. This is right after the game. A game where Nico Collins had 12 catches for over 150 yards and probably would be enough, we'll find out tomorrow, to get player of the week in the AFC offensive, except that Derrick Henry went bananas on Sunday night.
I bet
Henry's going to get that. Henry's going to get
that. He was in prime time.
Prime time, and he 87-yard touchdown right out of the chute. He was the reason they won the game. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the connection that C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins have.
No, you don't like this answer, but it's simple. Nico is open. So that's why the connection is strong, and Nico is... And he's open, but he's also, man, he's so competitive at the catch point. He's strong, he's physical, fast, big receiver. Like, that's a easy target for CJ. And Nico has showed up every time we needed him.
I think the biggest question right now is, and a lot of people have asked me this, I brought it up yesterday, is, all right, is CJ at times stretching the play out too long? I've been very conscious of this and trying to watch and figure out, okay, yeah, like, where's the, you got to find that balance, you know, of like, okay, sometimes you just got to really concede early on and then check. I think they are, like many quarterbacks do, I think they've worked their scramble drill. And I think that it's a pretty, I think it's generally pretty educated when CJ is trying to extend the play a little bit. And he feels like he likes where guys are in relation to the coverage and that it's whether it's realistic or not. So he's got to try to do that equation in his brain before he decides to check it down. I thought early in the game there were some times where he definitely should have thrown the ball earlier than he did. Later in the game, I thought the balance was right. On that final drive, obviously. Mm-hmm. When to throw the ball to Gumbawale and whatever else. And it's going to be a work in progress, and that's something that you get better and better at over time. But I feel like he's got the right balance right now. If they would just stop shooting themselves in the foot with some of these idiotic penalties, it would look a lot better.
Yeah, that last drive is how you want it to look, man.
It's the part of it is he's holding on to the ball longer at times than it seems like he should. But remember, a lot of times it's because it's 3rd and 17.
Yeah.
Or it's 3rd and 12. And yeah, it's going to take a while for stuff to develop. I don't need him checking down right then. I don't want him to have a tepid personality that's happy with just, hey, we'll have 5 yards better position to punt with. Hey.
One of the biggest compliments I can give to CJ probably is that I feel like when he gets flushed out, when the pocket breaks down and he gets flushed out, especially when he's rolling to his right, I feel like good things are going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, most often that throws
throwing
guys
back across the grain.
Yeah.
When he's running to his right and throwing to the left. It's usually a pretty educated decision he's making with that. So I feel good about that so far. And it's also been without really good pass protection. I mean, it did help the Texans offensive line in this game that the Jaguars barely blitzed at all. And one of their weaknesses has been picking up blitzes. I thought they did a good job handling movement and did some things better. But the offensive line got a little bit of a reprieve last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be that way this week versus the Bills.
With Buffalo, no, it won't. CJ's so slippery sometimes in the pocket too, man. Like he's stronger than you think.
When there's
he
a tight,
is.
Yeah, when there's when there
guys getting hands
when the
on
pockets
him.
Getting compressed and he just seeps up through the middle. And that's that pocket movement that he talked about during camp that he was working on. I thought he was getting really good at it by the end of last season. Yeah. This year, he definitely has a very good awareness of when to panic, when not to panic.
Yeah.
I thought when he scrambled for 11 yards at the beginning of that touchdown drive, the game-winning touchdown drive. He was about maybe an eighth of a second away from having somebody to throw to, but the pressure was in his lap, and he bailed. And that was the appropriate thing to do in that moment. I didn't think if he had tried to extend it there or tried to back up a little bit, I don't think it was right there. So I think he's got good judgment
about
it.
Yeah, they're giving you 11 yards.
Yeah,
take it.
Yeah.
Able to get out of bounds, too. Here's CJ talking about his connection with Nico Collins.
Man, it's you know, it's grown. You know, I always go back to like when I first met Nico. Throwing on the field during OTAs, and I told him, man, like, you're a superstar, and you know I'm gonna make sure people know that. And I feel like ever since then, like, man, he's had a swag and a confidence starting from, you know, last year, and it's just rolling it now. So, you know, he's been big for us. He's always somebody that I lean on, like when I'm ever, you know, like, just looking down or whatever. He come up to me, and he don't do too much. Like, he just be like, hey, Merrill, like, you good? You know who you are. And he always give me confidence. It's like I give it to him because, you know, he's just a heck of a player, man. I'm super proud of him. I was told that he was leading franchise in 4 games. Man, that's huge, bro, with all the great receivers we had. So come through this Texan organization, man. So I'm just, you know, I'm very, very happy to be a part of his journey.
Yeah, he's, man, I mean, Justin Jefferson is amazing. And then I think Nico is right there. He is right there.
I think that everything you talk about with teams playing more zone against the Texans, et cetera, around the league, it's not a big deal with Nico. All the things, all the opportunities that you get from the defenses the Texans are facing, CJ's being able to connect with Nico on that. Okay, hey, creating that space, finding spots in the zone with a well-placed pass so you can turn and run and get that run after the catch. He's been very good in that regard. That deep strike he had down the middle last week was in just classic cover two. Got a slower defender trying to cover up the seam. CJ places the ball perfectly right in the honey hole. Like, that's why I don't think or worry that, okay, this is just a 4-yard burst and at some point defenses will catch up. As long as either Stephon Diggs or Tank Dell is healthy, I think they're going to keep having these opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, and he's so good run after the catch. He's so good on contested stuff.
Yeah,
he's great going to the ground. You know, like some of these throws that CJ makes, and CJ's doing it by design. He's throwing it low and outside so that the only guy that can get it is his guy. Nico's ability to go to the ground, like to and catch low balls, you know, is he? There's really, other than super duper top end speed, there's really nothing that's, there's no aspect to being an elite receiver that he doesn't have in his bag.
Conversation we need to have later, we don't have time right now, is right this moment, was the Stephon Diggs trade worth it?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Jotting it down right now. Was the Stephon Diggs trade worth it? I like that.
Just based on right now.
Yep. Yep. We'll get to it. All right. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. We're going to get petty in the next segment. We will get petty. We're going to hear people get petty. So get ready if you're in your car to get petty. We do the Pettycast every Tuesday at 8 o'clock coming up next.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.